On Monday, socialist icon Senator Bernie Sanders said that now that he's no longer running for president, there's no need for him to reveal his campaign financial information. He said, it doesn't make any sense, he said. Completing such a filing, he continued, would be a waste of time. He was supposed to file his current financial information May 15th, but he got an extension. Now, if you remember, during the primaries, Bernie Sanders called for complete transparency regarding the funding of campaigns. Now, says NBC News, quote, in the teeth of a Democratic primary where Sanders posed a bona fide threat to Clinton, voters couldn't definitively know whether Sanders, historically one of the Senate's least wealthy members, suddenly parlayed his political fame into personal profit, or, for that matter, whether he sustained financial distress. The form Sanders didn't file would have detailed his finances through the middle of May 2016. There's a reason Sanders didn't turn in his paperwork. Like all good socialists, he gets a little touchy about his own finances, and he games the system. This week, Bernie Sanders tweeted, quote, to my Republican colleagues, if you do not have the guts to defend your ideas in a free election, get another job. I responded, quote, you endorsed Hillary and then you bought a vacation home, socialist hero. But socialists never take responsibility for their own personal economics or for their campaign economics or for their economic policies at all. Venezuelans are busy killing horses to eat them. Citizens are murdering one another over loaves of bread down there. And they're doing that because Venezuela has used Bernie Sanders' economics. But Sanders is sitting pretty with three homes and a wife who bankrupted a college thanks to her frivolous spending. Yes, seriously, because it turns out that when it comes to the socialists, what's good for the goose is not good for the Sanders. I'm Ben Shapiro. This is The Ben Shapiro Show. So much to get to today. Oh, so much, and we're very excited about all of this. Today is a Tuesday. That means it's time to deconstruct the culture. So we'll be doing that a little bit later in the program, which means we make fun of Ariana Grande for 10 minutes, basically. So that'll be exciting. You want to stick around for that. But we begin today with the Clinton Foundation and all of the Democrats beginning to realize, oh, wait, Hillary Clinton is corrupt. To which we say, yes, we knew that. We've been telling you that for 20 years. And while there are those of us in the Republican Party who still experience significant stomach-churning, acid-eating away at our esophagus angst over Donald Trump and his problems, you guys wanted Hillary Clinton. You begged for Hillary Clinton. You wanted her on that wall. You needed her on that wall. And so you got her. And now it's getting awkward because it turns out the Clinton Foundation is basically just a pass-through for Hillary Clinton and the State Department. New information out today, Huma Abedin, who is the very, very not lesbian friend of Hillary Clinton's very, very not lesbian first lady. The Hillary Clinton and Huma Abedin, turns out Huma Abedin was stashing classified materials in her car. Yes, in her car. Now, my wife worked at the VA, and she's a doctor, and she worked at the Veterans Administration while she was in medical school. And you had to comply with basic classification rules about health information. If you accidentally brought a document out of the hospital, you could theoretically be prosecuted. Huma Abedin took classified material and just left it in the front seat of her car. No problem at all. We're also finding out pretty much every day there's a new dictator who comes out and says, yes, of course we paid Hillary Clinton massive amount of money to have tea with her, and also for her to give us Ukraine, right? That sort of thing is happening pretty much every day now. And the Democrats are starting to realize, oh, yeah, this sucks. This is not good. James Carville, the Raging Cajun, is out there defending Hillary Clinton, and this is pretty ridiculous.
So the Clinton Foundation was A, taking no money for the Clintons, raising money from rich people, and giving it to poor people. And all of a sudden, the press has decided that we're going to go after this and shut it down. And you know what? You're probably going to be successful. And they're going to be people that are going to die because of this. And everything that I've ever been associated with Bill Clinton with, the three things I am most proud of. First, he stopped the genocide in Bosnia. Second, the Human Genome Project, of which my kids and grandchildren will forever thank him for. And third is the Clinton Foundation.
Okay, so James Carville, who at this point really, really looks like a bald weasel, he is apparently very upset that anyone wants to shut down the Clinton Foundation because of all the good it's done. The Clinton Foundation is a giant slush fund. They give grants to other charities. That's what they're just a pass-through. They don't really have projects of their own. They just have lots of money coming in and lots of money going out, and a lot of it being used to kind of feather the bed of the Clintons. So Carville says, he literally says, people will die without the Clinton Foundation. Yeah, the Clintons will die without the Clinton Foundation, because how will they eat? How will they eat? They were dead broke when they left office. They create the Clinton Foundation. Now they're worth $100 million. other Democrats are saying, you know, who aren't Clinton loyalists nearly as much. I mean, they still like Hillary, but they're not like James Carville, who's made his bones defending Hillary Clinton. They're saying the Clinton Foundation is just a crap show. Ben Cardin is a senator from Maryland. He says the Clinton Foundation, yeah, the way they do business, it's a problem.
Do you think the foundation should shut down altogether?
Well, first, let's recognize what the foundation has been able to do. The Clinton Foundation has helped millions of people, over 10 million HIV/AIDS alone, has saved countless lives. Its work is extremely important to global health. So they've done some really great things. Now, with Hillary Clinton being elected president, which we hope it will be, they clearly need to change the way they do business. And they've indicated they will. They're not going to accept any donations from foreign entities. They're going to change the way that the Clintons themselves interact with the foundation. Those decisions will be appropriate to Hillary Clinton as president of the United States.
It'll all work out okay as long as they separate out. I do love that now they're talking up the work of the Clinton Foundation. I watched a lot of the DNC, unfortunately, and wasted hours of my life doing so. I don't remember a single mention of the Clinton Foundation. Nobody was talking about the Clinton Foundation. Now, if you ran a charity that saved tens of millions of lives, wouldn't you be bragging about that at, like, every opportunity if you were running for political office? But nobody in the Clinton side has talked about the Clinton Foundation because it's embarrassing, because it was a scam, right? And of course they did some good work. What kind of scam would do no good work? I mean, really, if you're going to found a charity and then use it to gyp people, wouldn't you do at least a little bit of good work so that you can pretend that you're doing something useful, unless you're like Milo Yiannopoulos and you just take $100,000 in donations, stash it in your personal bank account, and do nothing? I mean, normally, people who are smart would presumably at least come up with a cover story. That's what the Clintons did here. When he says that the Clintons are going to separate off from the foundation, remember, they sort of pledged to do that in 2008 and then just didn't do it. Ed Rendell is the former senator from Pennsylvania. He's governor of Pennsylvania, I think. And Ed Rendell, he comes up and he also says, yeah, we should probably create some sort of separation between the Clintons and the Clinton Foundation.
The foundation has done incredible good things. We lose focus on that. If you ask the people of the world, do you want the Clinton Foundation shut down? They'd give you a resounding no because of the good that it has done. Now, should there be a wall between the Clintons and any fundraising going forward? Yeah, I think so. Absolutely. I would set up the strongest Chinese wall they could. Could it be turned over to partners or people of Clinton's trust to run for the next 4 or 8 years if the secretary becomes president without any of our knowledge of who's contributing? Yes, I think that can be done. But we don't want to lose the good work of the Clinton Foundation any more than we want to lose the good work that George W. Bush's foundation has done. They've been two things that have created incredible goodwill for America and incredible good for the world.
Well, incredible goodwill from the State Department. Bill Clinton has now put out a statement. Here's his new statement. Quote, "There is no doubt in my mind that we have never done anything knowingly inappropriate in terms of taking money to influence any kind of American government policy. That just hasn't happened," is what he said on May 4th. Now, whenever the Clintons use the word knowingly, that's code for, yeah, we absolutely did it, and we're going to get caught, so we're going to pretend we didn't realize it was happening. That's what knowingly means in Clinton land. In Clinton land, you say knowingly, and what that means is, yeah, we totally knew, but we have to have plausible deny. It was all an accident. It was all an accident. We had no clue whatsoever. We just had no clue that any of this stuff was happening. Yeah, they knew all this stuff was happening. It's a corrupt system. Donald Trump says, just shut down the foundation. I mean, come on.
Good morning to you. Let's talk about the Clinton Foundation. Among the people saying it's problematic and shut it down is Huffington Post. You also agree with that premise?
Well, number one, they should shut it down. Number two, they should give the money back to a lot of countries that we shouldn't be taking and they shouldn't be taking money from. Countries that influenced her totally. And also, countries that discriminate against women and gays and everybody else. I mean, that money should be it should be given back. They should not take that money.
Honestly, do you think that'll happen?
It should happen, whether or not it will. They're very greedy people, so maybe it won't, but it should happen.
I see that your campaign just sent out a statement a few minutes ago regarding this, and you write, "It is now clear the Clinton Foundation is the most corrupt enterprise in political history." You know, there are a lot of people who are not up to speed on what the Clinton Foundation's been doing that you feel is illegal.
Well, I think it's been really well documented in the book, and the book has been absolutely approved by so many people. You've had accounting firms going in there. You've had so many people going in, and it's pay for play. I mean, if you look at it, it's pay for play. So many things happen. Money is paid, and then all of a sudden, lots of good things the money. very, very bad situation.
Yeah, okay, so and everything Trump is saying there is, of course, true. The fact is it was pay for play. The fact is that the Clintons are corrupt. The fact is that they engage in this sort of corruption on a regular basis. They do. So Hillary Clinton now is a little bit on the ropes because all of this stuff about the Clinton Foundation is now breaking. And meanwhile, there's all sorts of headlines about whether she's healthy or not. As I've said, I think it's a kind of waste of time to have that conversation because she's not going to hand over her complete medical records. No one is going to vote for Trump because they think Hillary's unhealthy. Like, name the voter who goes, oh, Hillary, she's unhealthy. I guess I'm going to vote for the other 70-year-old gas bag. Like, that's not going to happen. All it really does is it underscores that she's dishonest, but we already know that she's dishonest. Nonetheless, Hillary Clinton now has to get out of her coffin and creak her way up the stairs of her Transylvanian estate to make her way to national television so that she can pretend to be human for a few minutes because she understands that she's under attack. So she goes, of course, to the friendly face of Jimmy Kimmel over on ABC. And she won't do a press conference, of course. That would involve answering questions. But she will hang out with Jimmy Kimmel on late night television because that's what our elections have become. So here is Hillary Clinton wearing what appears to be a stoplight, talking with Jimmy Kimmel.
Speaking of rumors that have gotten started, there's now the new one is that you are unhealthy, that you had a concussion, that Rudy Giuliani was on Fox News yesterday and today, and he's saying you seem to be sick, you look tired, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. Are you in good health?
Well, this has become one of their themes. Here, you take my pulse while I'm talking to you.
Okay.
Make sure I'm alive.
Oh, my God, there's nothing there.
There's nothing there. What can I say? It's, back in October, the National Enquirer said I would be dead in 6 months.
Oh, wow. Oh, boy.
So with every breath I take, I feel like it's a...
You have a new lease on life.
Yeah, a new lease on life. I don't know why they are saying this. I think, on the one hand, it's part of the wacky strategy.
Uh-huh.
Just say all these crazy things, and maybe you can get some people to believe you. On the other hand, it just absolutely makes no sense. And I don't go around questioning Donald Trump's health. I mean, as far as I can tell, he's as healthy as a horse.
Well, his doctor said he had the best health medical examination he's ever seen in a human being.
Yeah, I saw that.
Can you open this jar of pickles? This has not been tampered with. This is... Oh, you didn't get it.
So, a couple of things that are obviously pre-scripted, the pulse joke and the pickle joke. Let me make a quick point here. There is no way in hell she opened that jar of pickles. Not a way in hell she opened that jar of pickles. My wife is a 29-year-old healthy woman. She married me to open jars of pickles, okay? Those things are packed for nuclear war. The idea that Hillary Clinton is opening a jar of pickles, I mean, maybe she did, but that's only because she has the robot hand from Empire Strikes Back, right? She lost it in a lightsaber fight, and it was replaced by a bionic hand, and so she cranks it up to 10. It's like... Okay, so what would have been more amusing, honestly, is if she'd actually just retracted her hand, brought out the can opener in its place, and carved a hole in the top of the lid. But in any case, that's supposed to prove that Hillary Clinton is healthy. Okay, sure, whatever. By the way, the idea that she's never insulted Donald Trump's health, no, she's just called him crazy. So she insulted his mental health. There's more than one kind of health, and Hillary Clinton has engaged in all that. The whole I'm above everything is kind of silly. And of course, the late night hosts will do all this. I don't remember them doing the same thing with McCain. Do you? Remember back in 2008, everybody was questioning John McCain's health. I really don't remember the media having John McCain on to then have John McCain open jars of pickles to prove how healthy he was. I don't remember that. Hillary also tried to humanize herself about ISIS, and Jimmy Kimmel helped along because he's an ardent lefty. And so Hillary continues pretending to be a human. Beep, beep, boop. Hillary plays the human. Go.
Who would have guessed this audience would be so enthusiastic about the co-founder of ISIS?
That was one of the crazier things.
When you hear something like that, do you laugh? Do you think it's funny, or do you get upset, or how does it hit you?
You know, it's really funny, Jimmy. I don't get upset anymore because I'd be upset all the time.
Uh-huh.
So I don't get upset. I think it's crazy, but then I think, you know, this is like giving aid and comfort to the bad guys.
Do you think so?
Yes,
yeah.
I really do. I think there's enough evidence now that, you know, when Trump talks the way he talks, it actually helps the terrorists because they make a case.
So I love this. So he starts off with, you're not the co-founder of ISIS, right? She goes, no, Donald Trump basically is. Right? I mean, that's what she's saying, right? She's saying Donald Trump gives aid and comfort to the enemy. Okay, that language is the direct legal language with regard to treason. Right? You get hanged for that. So Hillary Clinton responds to, it's just crazy that you'd call me the co-founder of ISIS. Let's hang that guy, right? He's giving aid and comfort to the enemy. First of all, there's very little evidence. There's, in fact, no evidence that I'm aware of that ISIS is fundraising off of Hillary Clinton being the co-founder. Right? I mean, the only people who fundraise off of Hillary Clinton are Hillary Clinton. That's ridiculous. But again, the media just kind of go along with anything Hillary Clinton has to say. Finally, Hillary Clinton continues by saying that her emails are just boring. Like, stop paying attention to my emails. They're just so boring. I mean, come on. I'm an old woman already. I'm bored with this. I need to knit or something. Here's Hillary.
The State Department, I actually added it up today, and the State Department said that they have to release 15,000 emails by the deadline is a couple of days before the debate. Are you concerned about that?
No.
I mean, I would be terrified if my emails were released.
But, I mean, Jimmy, my emails are so boring.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I'm embarrassed about that. They're so boring. And so we've already released, I don't know, 30,000 plus. So what's a few more?
So at the end, you're not concerned that there's going to be something that Donald Trump is able to use against you, that the Republicans, that comes in at the last second.
But he makes up stuff to use against him. So if he would stick with reality, I wouldn't have a worry in the world.
Have you ever sent him an email?
This is ridiculous. Okay, she wouldn't have a worry in the world. She's not worried about these emails coming out. So why did she delete them? Why didn't she just hand them over to the State Department? Why did she basically take her server and then wipe it with a cloth? Okay, Hillary Clinton's a congenital liar. Of course she's going to say this. He's going to say, are you worried about those emails? And she's going to sit there going, yeah, I'm really worried. I'm really worried that people are going to discover my love letters to whom. Like, what is she going to say to that? Of course she's going to say, I'm not concerned about what's in the emails. She should be concerned about what's in the emails because in all likelihood, it's not going to be anything, you know, juicy sexually. It's going to be all of her emails with the Clinton Foundation showing that they were one and the same, and the media will cover it up and pretend none of it matters. Okay, so we have to say goodbye to our friends on Facebook and YouTube. For the rest of the podcast, become a subscriber at dailywire.com, and then you can see all the visuals, which you'll want to see today. On Deconstructing the Culture Day particularly, you want to see the visuals because that's when we play music videos and make fun of them. And if you also want to become a subscriber so that you can send me emails that we then place in the vaunted Ben Shapiro mailbag, then you can go to dailywire.com. $8 a month will do it for you, and that's less than the cost of one of Hillary Clinton's tennis balls to put on the bottom of her walker. So you can just go over to dailywire.com and subscribe there. Okay, so meanwhile, what's Donald Trump up to? What's Donald Trump up to? So Hillary Clinton is making a joke of herself. She's the most corrupt woman, but she's boring corrupt, right? She's not exciting corrupt because it's the same corrupt story over and over and over. As I've said before, part of the problem with campaigning against someone who's as corrupt as Hillary Clinton is that the corruption level never changes. It always is what the corruption level is. It's always the same. It's super duper corrupt. And so there'll be a new piece of news, and the new piece of news is she's really, really corrupt. Okay, so there's nothing new there. Meanwhile, there's always more news with Donald Trump. So Donald Trump's big deal right now is that he's in the midst of a pivot. The pivot! It's here! We've been waiting for years now for Donald Trump to pivot and demonstrate that he's not, in fact, Donald Trump. In fact, Donald Trump is Dwight D. Eisenhower with crazy hair and a weird glow. So Donald Trump is now pivoting on immigration. And he's now basically embracing Marco Rubio's plan, except bifurcated. He's saying, shut the border, and then we'll figure out what to do with the people here, which, by the way, was the same as Ted Cruz's plan and the one that Marco Rubio actually ended up presenting during the campaign. And all these people who, during the primaries, were saying that you were cucked, you were just the worst, if you liked Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio because Trump was going to be so tough on immigration, Trump's now shifting his position, and everybody in the Trump train is just going, oh, well, they're partying hard in the dining car of the Trump train, so they're not paying attention. Kellyanne Conway, who is the rational half of the new Trump team, the irrational half is Steve Bannon, who's just a marauding monster of crazy. But Kellyanne Conway, she comes forward and she says, Donald Trump's new plan is basically a coherent one. Here's what it looks like.
The question is whether, is he still going to deport the 11 million illegal immigrants in this country?
So this is what he has said. He has said, whether it's his speech last month at the convention, which everybody can pull and read, or what he said in the private meeting that somehow got reported, I think, and distorted by those who weren't in attendance. I was there. It's basically the same, and he said it again today in Ohio. Megan, what he's saying is, first, secure the borders and actually apply and enforce the law. And that sounds like, oh, enforce the law. Guess what? If we actually enforce our immigration laws, a lot of this would start to really change. Secondly, you have to deport those who have committed crimes. That certainly is nowhere near.
But before, but that's all sort of generic Republican talk. Like many Republicans
well,
have
I don't
said,
know.
Maybe not
it.
That
Maybe they don't
strict.
Mean it.
Maybe that's not strict. Well, that's what people are wondering whether Trump means it, too.
He means
because,
it.
You know, in the primary season, he came out and said he would favor a deportation force. He was pretty explicit about that. And so now the question is there doubt about that?
I think a deportation force is more the logistics. In other words, how do you achieve the goal of making sure that we are fair to everyone? I think too much of the conversation is always about what's fair to the illegal immigrants. What about what's fair to the American workers?
So they are going to be deported. The 11 million are going to be deported.
Here's what he said about that. He will enforce the law, which will take care of a lot of that. He will deport those who have absolutely committed a crime, being convicted of a crime. He will make sure that American jobs are protected. He will absolutely build that wall.
And again, she's refusing to answer the question. You're going to deport everybody. Because you remember, Donald Trump said that he was going to have the Trump deportation force. They were going to walk around with a giant T on their shirts. And they were going to walk around with butterfly nets. And they were going to drive down to the local Home Depot, round up Jose, and drive him to the border. Well, that apparently is no longer the plan. I just want to note one thing, okay? Because we're going to play a piece of audio now that frustrates me and should frustrate other people who believe in actual things like facts. Here is Bill O'Reilly back in July, just a few weeks ago, not long ago. I'm old enough to remember it. July 26th, 2016. Bill O'Reilly says that Donald Trump is a direct repudiation to Barack Obama.
Talking Points is in business to put forth the truth. So here it is. According to an average of polling by Real Clear Politics, 69% of Americans are unhappy with the direction of their country. Just 23% are pleased with the present condition of the USA. That is a direct repudiation of President Obama's point of view.
There he's saying Trump is a repudiation of Obama. Last night on Bill O'Reilly's program, Donald Trump is asked about his deportation plan. And here is Donald Trump on Barack Obama and deportation.
They're known by law enforcement who they are. We don't do anything. They go around killing people and hurting people, and they're going to be out of this country so fast your head will spin. We have existing laws that allow you to do that. As far as everybody else, we're going to go through the process. What people don't know is that Obama got tremendous numbers of people out of the country. Bush, the same thing. Lots of people were brought out of the country with the existing laws. Well, I'm going to do the same thing, and I just said that.
Okay, but here's what everybody wants to know.
Do
this
it in a very
thing.
Humane.
Okay.
We want to do it in a very humane manner.
Okay, so so he was the repudiation, the living repudiation of Obama, but now he deported a lot of people, and we're going to do it. We're going to be humane. And then O'Reilly actually goes on to ask him about the detention centers. And Trump says, we won't have detention centers. We're going to keep them in Trump Tower. Like he doesn't explain what he's going to do with these people, but there won't be detention centers anymore. So, quick note. He can flip on his position. He can evolve, as they like to say, evolve on his position, which is really just say fib about his position. Or he can move to a new position. He can do any of these things. And maybe it's politically beneficial for him to do so because his immigration position is popular with a lot of the Republican primary base, but it's not popular in a general election, so he can stick and he can move. Maybe that's a politically beneficial point. Okay, I'm willing to accept that. But I do want to make one quick point here, and that is that this is not his original position. Okay, this is not what he was originally saying. He has moved. He has changed his mind. This was not always what he was saying. The reason I make this point is because there are people like Ann Coulter who are just ardent Trumpers. I mean, Ann has a new book called In Trump We Trust, which basically says it all. Not in God we trust, in Trump we trust. And I'm friends with Ann. I like Ann. But this is ridiculous stuff. I mean, here's Ann Coulter saying, don't worry about it. Don't worry. Donald hasn't changed anything. Nothing's changed. Sure, he's praising Obama. Sure, he's praising Bush. I hated both of them on immigration. But basically, he's saying the same thing he always was because crazy towns.
Look, we know the direction he's going in. We know there's going to be a wall. What I used to hear for half the campaign was, and he secretly told the New York Times there's not even going to be a wall. I mean, of course, there's give and take in Washington. With Hillary, we are getting, as she has said and as Tim Kaine have said, totally open borders, complete amnesty, along with a member of my party or my ex-party. Paul Ryan, Speaker of the House, they are both for granting amnesty to millions of illegals. Hillary says she wants to more than quadruple the number of Muslim refugees she's bringing in. the details of Trump's plans. We're getting a wall. He's going to let ICE do its job. How much he can do without the agreement of Congress, whether that's in Democrat hands or my old Republican Party's hands, you know, that of course there's going to be some give and take and negotiation.
Stop it there. So I just want to point something out. She's now making a different argument, right? The original argument was Trump is superior to Cruz and Rubio because he won't cave on immigration. Her new argument is Hillary. Her argument is Hillary. You know, we don't have to talk about Trump because Hillary. Okay, that's a fine argument. It's Dennis Prager's argument, right? And I keep citing Dennis because Dennis is somebody who I really respect on a moral and intellectual level, and he holds this position. So understand, when people say vote Trump, back Trump to stop Hillary, I get it. I understand it. I just want to make one point. This is not what Donald Trump was saying. So don't give me this crap about how Donald Trump was tough on immigration. He was the toughest man on immigration. Everybody was a globalist cuck if they didn't back Donald Trump on immigration, right? I don't want to hear that crap anymore. But here's the thing that's amazing. I was speaking before the show with Andrew Klavan. I was saying the thing that's truly frustrating about this particular campaign is that you sort of feel like you're living in Back to the Future, except the timeline resets every couple of days, and you're the only one who remembers how the timeline used to be. Right, so you remember what it was like when Biff was the head of the hotel chain and had married Marty's mom, but then they go back and they change it, and you're the only one who remembers that now. Right, you're the only one who remembers that was ever the case. Everybody else thinks that Biff is just washing cars in the front yard. Right, that everybody else, and if you mention it to them, oh, you what? That's not real. That never happened. You must be crazy. That's nuts. Right, you remember what it was like before George McFly was saved from being hit by the car by Marty. Right, you remember what the situation was like beforehand, right? But now the timeline is reset. Now every couple of days in this campaign is like this. Donald Trump changes his position, and then it's not just that everybody goes, okay, he's a politician. He changes his position for political convenience, just like the rest of them. No, that's impossible because Donald Trump must be the most honest man who ever lived, according to his followers. And therefore, we now have to revise the past too. We just memory hole it, right? We just rewrite the history, just like in 1984. We rewrite the history, and it never existed. Right? It's the same. The Democrats do the same thing, right? Hillary Clinton was always an advocate of same-sex marriage. Never mind that she was ardently against same-sex marriage until precisely the moment it benefited her to become pro-same-sex marriage. Never mind that Hillary Clinton was for TPP before she was against TPP. Right? Bottom line is that we now have to rewrite history on behalf of these candidates. So truth becomes secondary. So if you get feeling discombobulated, and I have to admit, I'm feeling discombobulated by this election cycle. The reason I'm feeling discombobulated is not because Donald Trump is such a ridiculous outlier, even though he is, or because Hillary Clinton is such a deeply corrupt, perverse human being, even though she is. The reason I'm feeling discombobulated is because every 2 days, somebody rewrites reality and tells me that if I remember the actual reality with tape, it's because I'm crazy and out to get Trump. Okay, no, I just remember what it was like when George McFly was being a peeping Tom at Lorraine and got hit by the car. I remember that, right? It happened. So this is it's very irritating all the way through. Again, you want to support Trump's transition, support his transition, call him Caitlyn Jenner, I don't care. But the bottom line is that if you are going to at least speak honestly about this, acknowledge that he's making a change, and then we can all move on with our lives. Don't say that anybody who is a little upset that Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush were all hit for being too soft on immigration, and now Donald Trump is basically mirroring their position. That if we say that was dishonest, just say, okay, fine, you know, there was a primary, that's politics. It's kind of scuzzy, but that's the way that it goes. Okay, so now I want to talk briefly about this piece that came out yesterday from Laura Ingraham's website. Now, Laura Ingraham has been angry at me ever since I suggested that her worship for Donald Trump and her attempts to paint Donald Trump as the mythical conservative God King were damaging the conservative movement. Again, I make a very strong distinction between people who acknowledge the problems with Trump but will vote for him anyway, the Pragers of the world, and the people like Laura Ingraham who pretend that Donald Trump is this mythical conservative creature who is going to save the United States. I also, by the way, have objections with my friend Hugh Hewitt doing this routine where he sort of pretends that Donald Trump is somebody he's not. Well, what Hugh does, because Hugh is not comfortable with Trump, is he says, he gives Trump advice on the radio. He says things like, could you not be so crazy? And Trump goes, absolutely. And then Hugh comes back to me and says, well, Trump said he wouldn't be crazy. And so, well, yeah, I know he said that. I just don't believe him. But in this case, well, Laura Ingraham is like an ardent Trumpster. She's an ardent Trumpster. There's an article yesterday at her website, lifezet.com, and it's an interesting website. Like, I never do this routine where I won't link to websites except for Breitbart.com. But LifeSet.com. It's an interesting website that I disagree with frequently. There's an article there from a guy named Edmund Kozak. I don't know Edmund Kozak from Adam. I've never heard of him before. Honestly, I thought that he was played by Teddy Savalas. That's Kozak, but I don't. But in any case, Edmund Kozak writes this piece in which he says that I am not a true conservative. Why am I not a true conservative, you may ask? Well, according to Edmund Kozak, quote, the Constitution worship of those like Ben Shapiro and Senator Ted Cruz reveals that the mainstream conservative position has largely forgotten the principle of imperfectibility. So I worship the Constitution. That's why I'm a bad conservative. Okay. And he says that that's bad because I worship it. I don't recognize that there's imperfectibility to human nature. This makes precisely negative 100% sense. This is the stupidest thing ever. The reason this is stupid is because the entire basis of the Constitution of the United States is the idea that man is not only not perfect, but cannot be perfected. That's why you have interest balancing interest. It's why you have the states balancing the federal government. It's why you have a government of enumerated powers that's not supposed to blast through those enumerated powers into Trumpian executive overreach, right? That's the whole idea of the Constitution is people are limited and bad, or at least they have the capacity for bad. And that's why we have to have this limited government, right? This is what Madison says in Federalist 51. He says, if men were angels, one of my favorite quotes in all of American philosophy, if men were angels, no government would be necessary. If angels were to govern men, neither external nor internal controls on government would be necessary. In framing a government which is to be administered by men over men, the great difficulty lies in this. You must first enable the government to control the government governed, and in the next place, oblige it to control itself. One of the most beautifully stated ideas of human nature and the nature of government ever written by James Madison in Federalist 51. That was the background to the Constitution. The background to the Constitution was people are capable of good, but they're also capable of great bad. And if you allow them ultimate power, they will use that power to make other people servants. That's why I like the Constitution. But if I like the Constitution, I'm not conservative enough. I'm not conservative enough. So how does he get to that point? What's he really angry at? He's angry because I was ripping the alt-right. So I've talked about this at length on the show before. The alt-right, we can sort of define it this way. There's the there's sort of the racist anti-Semitic portion of the alt-right, and then there's the broader alt-right philosophy that tends to cater to those people. So the broader alt-right philosophy is sort of the Pat Buchanan philosophy. The Pat Buchanan philosophy is that the Constitution doesn't mean a lot. The only thing that means a lot is European civilization. European civilization, which created America and created the West, that European civilization encompasses certain rights and values, and the only way to protect that European civilization is to see everyone else as an enemy. People can't really assimilate to it. It's impossible to take in populations that will learn about that European civilization. Instead, what you need to do is close your borders and protect yourself. That's sort of the alt-right philosophy, kind of European far-right nationalism. It tends to merge with anti-Semitism because Jews are seen as sort of this middleman minority who come in and don't play by the rules. It's anti-immigrant. So if you're an immigrant from a foreign country that hasn't experienced the West, or even if you are from a country that's experienced the West, but you might not be the right color according to some of these folks, then that means that you are incapable of assimilating to American philosophy and European philosophy. So it's shot through with racism and anti-Semitism, the kind of cultural superiority complex, which is something with which I agree that Western civilization is superior. For the alt-right, because it's not tied to the idea that these principles can be extended to other people and that people can integrate themselves into them, and instead we must protect our philosophy from other people who would enter in, because of that, it tends to veer toward racism and anti-Semitism, unfortunately. And that's what the alt-right has become. And this is why the alt-right people, they like Trump, because Trump is not really, he doesn't care about the Constitution. He doesn't know anything about Western civilization, but he's anti-trade and he's anti-immigration. And that they agree with. So the alt-right has latched onto Trump, and then every time they have a chance, they tweet at me memes of black babies in gas chambers. And it's really gross and nasty. And the reason this has become an issue is because Steve Bannon of Breitbart.com is now the chairman of Trump's campaign, and Breitbart has openly embraced the alt-right. Bannon himself called Breitbart.com the new home of the alt-right, and he said not all alt-right people are racist and anti-Semitic. They're a small minority, but, you know, if they're there, they're there, basically. And that's pretty egregious stuff, in my view. It's what I've been warning about for months, the replacement of a constitutional conservative philosophy of limited government with the idea that a big, vast government is capable of protecting Western civilization. See, the alt-right doesn't even believe in limited government. The alt-right believes that a European people—this is where you get into the racism aspect—a European people nationalist European people, they can vote for big government, and that big government is still capable of carrying forward the nationalist mission. Constitutional conservatism says there's no such thing as perfect people. There's no European people that's perfect or wonderful. The Europeans have brought a hell of a lot of suffering to the world, as well as great civilization. People are capable of great good and great evil. It's their ideas that matter, not who they are. The ideas that matter. It's the creed that matters. So what did I do wrong? What I wrote was, constitutional conservatives can't stand the alt-right. Conservatives, real conservatives, believe that only a philosophy of limited government, God-given rights, and personal responsibility can save the country. And that creed is not bound to race or ethnicity. That sounds pretty straight down the line to me. I mean, that's the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution and the founding philosophy of Jefferson and Adams and Madison and all of the pre-founding philosophers. Like, it's a combination of Hobbes and Locke. All of this is true. But according to Laura Ingraham's website, that description of conservatism, again, limited government, God-given rights, personal responsibility, which seems pretty straightforward to me, that's hysterical. That's hysterical. First, in order to declare that hysterical, I have to be declared an establishment GOP elite. This is the slur that alt-right people use for anyone who disagrees with their closed borders, closed trade nonsense. Now, to be fair, to be straight, I've been in favor of a border wall before Trump. I'll be in favor of a border wall after he reneges on it. I've been in favor of a more limited immigration policy for a long time, particularly for people who are coming from countries that have no history with Western civilization. Not because people are incapable of integrating, but because there's been no push to integrate in the United States, thanks to the left. But in order to kind of turn people into the other, to turn normal conservatives into the enemy, they have to pretend that we're open borders globalist cucks, right? This is the way that they talk about people like me. I'm open borders, even though I'm not. I'm a globalist, even though I'm not. But in any case, what he says is my definition of conservatism is wrong. He says, in his criticisms against the French Revolution, Anglo-Irish statesman Edmund Burke, Russell Kirk is a conservative philosopher, Russell Kirk's biggest influence and the recognized godfather of conservatism, attacked the abstract nature of the revolutionary's rights of man. Burke argued men are not born with inherent abstract rights to which they are entitled. Instead, he highlighted the ancient inherited rights and liberties of the English people, the result of a specific set of historical circumstances and political and social developments unique to the English nation. That's a fancy way of saying, basically, that I'm getting my concept of natural rights wrong. And I say that we have to be based on limited government and God-given rights and personal responsibility. What I'm saying is the rights to life, liberty, and property espoused by John Locke. He's saying that Edmund Burke, who's a more conservative philosopher, he thinks, Edmund Burke wouldn't have liked that because human rights that are undefined, right, God, natural rights, they're undefined and they can be used any which way. There's only one problem with that. That's not what Burke says. That's not what Burke says. What Burke says is that our understanding of what our rights are springs from Western civilization, which, of course, is true. And Burke called the same rights that Locke did natural rights. Burke himself wrote, "The rights of men, that is to say the natural rights of mankind, are indeed sacred things, and if any public measure is proved mischievously to affect them, the objection ought to be fatal to that measure." Right? I and all other constitutional conservatives believe that God-given rights mean what Burke said they meant, right? Rights that are inherently connected to a uniquely Western civilization rooted in Judeo-Christian philosophy, but that is discoverable by all peoples. Meaning that our concept of rights comes from Western civilization, and that comes out of a Judeo-Christian notion. But that Judeo-Christian notion is true, and it's true for all people. And all people do have those rights. In other words, the Judeo-Christian civilization is right, and other civilizations are wrong. Right? That's what conservatism says. He says, however, that basically because Judeo-Christian civilization discovered these rights, they're only applicable to Judeo-Christian civilization, and that, of course, is wrong. That, of course, is wrong. So all this is basically a fancy way of just defending, supporting Donald Trump. It is sort of ironic that Kozak then goes on to blame the conservative movement for supporting nation building and mass migration, and he says the Constitution alone cannot guarantee a political utopia. Of course, that's true. He says that we've abandoned pretense of defending an existing moral order or social traditions. I just want to make a quick point. Donald Trump is a thrice married serial adulterer who brags about having sex with other men's wives, backs Planned Parenthood, backed partial birth abortion until 5 minutes ago. Donald Trump believed in open borders until he decided to swivel on that in the last year and a half. Donald Trump has embraced a corporatist globalism himself. Right? He believes in this corrupt relationship between government and business. So all of this is to say that the alt-right is doing a clever job of perverting conservatism, but it doesn't. But that's what frightens me about the alt-right, and you can see that their disdain for the Constitution is part and parcel of the program, because after all you people who believe in the Constitution, while you worry about the Constitution, we're being swept over with waves of immigration. This is how the alt-right talks. And they forget to mention that the Constitution itself allows us the possibility of taking harsher measures on the border. But in fact, if we'd stuck to the Constitution in the first place, we wouldn't have the welfare state that's leading to this mass migration across our borders in favor of government benefits. All right, so that's that. Let's move on to some things that I like and some things that I hate, and then deconstructing the culture. So, things I like, we're doing sort of Israel-related things today that I like. The book Exodus by Leon Uris. This is a really terrific book. Leon Uris is a really, really good author. And my favorite book of his is a book called Mila 18, which is a book about the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising that's really good. This book is also very famous. They made a not very good movie of it with Paul Newman. Leon Uris is a really good writer, and this book is sort of the history of the founding of Israel. And it's a really good, you know, very justly famous book. I mean, over a million copies have been sold, so... It's a pretty great book. Okay, other things that I like, I have to admit, the Cincinnati Zoo has now shut down its Twitter account. It shut down its Twitter account because people kept tweeting Harambe memes at it. I have to admit, I find these things absolutely hysterical. I think they are the funniest thing that ever was. So let's give an example. The Cincinnati Zoo put this up, right? It says the yellow pond turtle has 8 vertebrae more than mammals have, and people started tweeting things back like, Harambe had 8 hearts. And Harambe had 7 vertebrae, just like a human. What you did was similar to killing a human. The Cincinnati Zoo has 0 Harambe. Harambe was a mammal. Every single tweet of the Cincinnati Zoo is like this. I'll show another one. It's pretty amazing. Often called water pig for its aquatic habits, the capybara, is how it's pronounced, is actually a rodent, the largest rodent in the world. And people start tweeting back at the Cincinnati Zoo, Harambe loved aquatic habits. Harambe loved the world. Harambe had rodent friends. Too bad Harambe isn't here to enjoy them. I have to admit, I find this like darkly hilarious. I think it's really, really, really funny. Do you have any more of these? I think we have one. Is that it? Okay, so that's all we've got of the Harambe memes. But you know, people were saying, stop bothering the Cincinnati Zoo. Yeah, it's bad to bother the Cincinnati Zoo. It's also high hilarious. It's just really funny. Okay, things I hate. Let's do it. So many things I hate today. Yay! Lots of hatred in my heart today. Okay, so we'll begin with John Oliver of HBO, another one of these British types who thinks that he is brilliant because he has a British accent, and he says that Donald Trump should drop out of the race.
Mr. Trump, Donnie, Daniel, I would like to propose to you a third option, and that is drop out. Simply drop out and tell America this entire candidacy was a stunt. You have 2 really bad options here. If you keep going, you're going to spend the next 11 weeks ramping up hatred in speeches, injecting poison into the American bloodstream that will take generations to remove, and denying the country the contest of ideas that a presidential campaign should actually be. And after that, you're either going to win or you're going to lose. And I think both those scenarios end pretty badly for you. It would be humiliating to lose to a candidate whose trustworthiness is doubted by 60% of registered voters. That's nearly 2/3. Perhaps most powerfully of all, Mr. Trump, Donathan. You didn't just expose the flaws in our political system. You exposed the flaws in us. Just think about how triumphant it would feel to say on national television, I openly ran on a platform of impossibly ignorant proposals steeped in racial bigotry, and nobody stopped me.
Okay, so here's my problem with this. The problem with this is that John Oliver completely ignores that on the other side of the aisle is the most corrupt woman ever to run for high office. And this is what the left always does. You wonder why the right reacts with skepticism when the left says things about Donald Trump. It's because of crap like this. Because John Oliver goes, why doesn't he ask Hillary to drop out? Hillary Clinton was almost indicted by the FBI like a month and a half ago. I haven't heard John Oliver saying, you know, Hillary Clinton is running on a platform of corruption. Hillary Clinton is running on a platform of cronyism. Why doesn't she drop out? Of course, he's never going to say that because he likes Hillary Clinton. That sort of hypocrisy really does bother me. Other things that I hate. One of the things that I really dislike about the Trump candidacy is that it's made liars of everybody. So everybody, in order to defend Trump, they now have to take positions. Again, they have to go back and rewrite the Marty McFly history and pretend that it never happened. So Kellyanne Conway, who seems like a nice enough gal. She's on with Megyn Kelly. And Kellyanne Conway had said months ago when she was a Cruz supporter, she doesn't like Donald Trump's name-calling. Watch her try to rewrite her own history and then pretend that everyone's crazy for noticing.
And you came out and said, I don't like the personal insults. I don't like somebody who hurls personal insults. And then you came out and said, Donald Trump doesn't do that. Now, you know that's not true.
Well, what I was saying in the context of he doesn't do it without being attacked first. I mean, people forget that this man is
attacked. But does that excuse it?
Well, it's
I mean, just today he called Mika Brzezinski neurotic, which is another term for basically mentally ill.
And he, look, I don't like the
He's called other female news personalities things like crazy.
I don't like the
person. The man does hurl personal insults,
Kellyanne. But not unprompted, meaning I don't like personal insults. Let me make very clear. I don't like them only because I'm a mother of four young children. I'd be a hypocrite if I liked them. And I actually think he can win on the issues, on the substance. Mm-hmm. Our best game against Hillary Clinton is to take her on four square about her record.
But how is that working so far? Because that stuff about Mika was today.
So he felt like he was being attacked. Mm-hmm. And we have interns monitoring the programs, and he felt like it was a three-hour screen.
With all due respect to my friends over on MSNBC, that show has, like, two viewers. Why does he let himself get worked up over what... So she doesn't like him. Too bad. Who cares?
Well, look, I'll tell you this, Megan. If it's up to me, he's in a tennis match with Hillary Clinton. He's lobbying and shooting aces at her all day long. We don't pick a fight with the ref. We don't boo the crowd.
Yeah.
Because we're absolutely back in Hillary Clinton's head.
Okay, so here, this is my big problem, and it's a thing I hate, is that she could, you can see she's so trapped here, right? Because the fact is that when did Rafael Cruz deserve to be linked to JFK's murder? When did that happen exactly? Right? When did Heidi Cruz deserve to be called ugly by Donald Trump? And of course, Kellyanne Conway condemned all that at the time, but now she's out there saying, oh, he only responds, which is the typical Trump line, which is, of course, a lie. Again, it puts everybody in such an awkward position. This should be the easiest election ever. Hillary is corrupt. Hillary is awful. She's robotic. She's unfunny. She's egregiously nasty. And yet, people are being forced to lie for Donald Trump in order to up his positives. Okay, it's Tuesday, so time for an episode of Deconstructing the Culture, because we're past the clock and time has no meaning. So, Ariana Grande, she has a new song out called Dangerous Woman. Ariana Grande, we call her the great donut licker of Lake Elsinore, because a few months back, if you recall, she went into a coffee shop with donuts and she started licking the donuts and, like, leaving them on the counter, which is a weird thing to do. She's a weirdo. So Ariana Grande, she has a new music video out called Dangerous Woman. And we will play a little bit of it now. Okay, can you pause it for 1 second? We haven't gone anywhere. So first of all, every single music video in the top 40 has a girl looking like she's ready to strip. Right? They're all wearing lingerie. Like, when's the last time you saw a music video in the top 40 that wasn't a woman wearing lingerie? It's been a long time. Second of all, one of the problems I have with Ariana Grande as a personality is that, and this is not meant offensively to Ariana Grande, objectively speaking, Ariana Grande looks like she's about 14 years old. I mean, she looks very, very young. I know she's 23, but she looks like she's about 14 years old. And her typical audience is about 14, 15 years old. This kind of stuff tailored for men is kind of distasteful. Don't need permission, made my decision to test my limits. Cause it's my business, God is my witness, stop what I finished. Don't need no holder, taking control of this kind of moment. I'm locked and loaded, completely focused, my mind is open. All that you got's gonna skin on my neck, don't you stop, boy. So first of all, the song is terrible, but... Okay, so we don't have to play the whole thing. This is... Okay, so the whole premise of this... First of all, the entire music video, for people who can't see, is her just writhing around on a bed, basically. I mean, it's just her writhing around on a bed in various states of undress and singing about how she wants to have sex. That's the entire song. And there's a line in here that really does trouble me. Later, she says, all girls want to be like that. Bad girls underneath like that. You know who I'm feeling inside. Something about. All girls want to be like that. Bad girls underneath like that. You know how I'm feeling inside. Something about. Okay, so first of all, bad grammar. But second of all, when she says all girls want to be like that, that all girls are bad girls underneath, this puts forward a negative image to men. It does. It's saying to young men that all girls in the end want to be risky with regard to their sex lives, right? That's what she's saying. She's saying all girls want to be dangerous. All girls want to be risky with their sex lives. And then people on the feminist left who defend this as some sort of feminist iconic feminist image, right? First of all, if women acted like this every day in real life, men would have no problem with radical feminism. If this is what radical feminism always looked like, I have a feeling that all of the radical men's rights guys would be very, very happy. Okay, but beyond that, this portrayal of women as sort of deeply sexualized all the time, all they really want is to be dangerous underneath, and saying openly that all girls want to be like that, it encourages men to treat women as though they are prepared to be risky in their sex lives. And that's no excuse for men to be terrible. But if you put out into the ether these vague images of all women want to be risky in their sex lives, that doesn't have a good impact. Okay, it doesn't mean it's justified. It just means that things have impact. If I say that all women are promiscuous, that's going to have an impact on how men act toward women, which is why I don't say all, because women aren't promiscuous. Some women are, some women aren't. But this kind of notion that all women are risk takers is a trope that really is not something that's good to put out to young men. It's amazing. The same people who will decry the rape culture on college campuses will put stuff out like this and say that it's not bad for women in any way. Okay, really? It's not bad for women in any way? You complain about objectification of women, and then these are the women that you prop up as your feminist heroes? People like Ariana Grande and Beyonce Knowles? Really? Okay, that's one message here I want to talk about. The second is the notion of romance. So romance now, there's no such thing as romance anymore. Romance is just sex. That's all it is. It's just sex in these music videos. I want to play for you an actually romantic song back from a time when people actually cared about romance, cared about love, cared about emotion in relationships, and not just the feeling of skin to skin. Because honestly, it's just a mechanical act if there's no emotional connection. You know, this notion that sex is transgressive and taboo, it is, of course, depending on the circumstance, but that's not the essence of a normal, healthy sex life. If all you're looking for in your sex life, if all you're looking for in intimacy is violation of taboo, you're going to end up in some pretty dark places pretty quickly, which is how we end up with the 50 Shades of Grey culture. True romance requires there to actually be simpatico between the participants in the sex. Okay, here's another song invoking skin. This is one of my favorite songs of all time. It's Under My Skin with this classic Frank Sinatra 1956 Nelson Riddle arrangement. This is my song from my wife. We have a couple of different songs. This one, I think I've played for you, John Denver's You Fill Up My Senses before. But this is a classic of swing genre. So here's Frank Sinatra. This is I've Got You Under My Skin. I mean, come on, gang. Is there any comparison just musically? Come on.
I've got you under my skin. I've got you deep in the heart of me. So deep in my heart that you're really a part of me. I've got you under my skin.
Oh, that's great. Okay, so the point of this lyric, there's still something transgressive about this song, right? This song is written by Cole Porter. The lyrics are by Cole Porter. The transgressive part is he goes on, he says, I'd sacrifice anything, come what might, for the sake of having you near, in spite of a warning voice that comes in the night and repeats in my ear, don't you know, little fool, you never can win. Come on, now, use your mentality. Wake up to reality, but each time that I do, just the thought of you makes me stop before I begin because I've got you under my skin. The idea here is not, God, your boobs. Right? That's not the idea. Oh, what a nice butt you've got. Right? I mean, it's not skin to skin. We can feel each other. Right? That's not the idea here. The idea here is that there is a spiritual drive. There's an emotional drive between man and woman, and sex is the natural culmination of that. And that doesn't necessarily mean that every relationship is a good idea. But without that drive, without the emotional connection, without the spiritual connection between man and woman, everything just degrades to the level of a woman making love to a camera sitting on a bed wearing lingerie. It It just turns into softcore pornography. That's all it does. The difference between romance and softcore pornography is the emotional connection and the spiritual connection between two people that leads to the act of sex. When you strip all of the emotion away, and when you say that true liberation lies in treating sex just like any other bodily function, you end up with sort of the degraded stupidity of an Ariana Grande video as opposed to the sexy romance of Frank Sinatra's music. All right, tomorrow is Wednesday. There will be more politics to report, I am sure. Plus, we do our biblical analysis on Wednesdays. So if you're into that Bible thing, then stop by. Even if you're not, then just stick around till the end and then skip the Bible stuff. And that's all right. We'll still deal with you. I mean, maybe you go to hell. I don't know. But that's not my responsibility in any case. I'm Ben Shapiro. This is The Ben Shapiro Show.